In 2011, Banader Hospital in Somalia became a theater of horrors. Babies with stick-thin limbs, mothers too weak to cry, children dying in corridors. The world saw what it expected, another African tragedy requiring Western rescue. But peel back the layers and a different story emerges. This wasn't nature's cruelty, it was manufactured catastrophe. The U.S. government had weaponized food assistance, withholding aid to pressure al-Shabaab militants, condemning millions to starvation in the process. The irony cuts deep. The very nations positioned as Africa's saviors had engineered its suffering. Yet beyond this manufactured crisis, something extraordinary was unfolding. Africa's economy was growing at double the global average, with some countries hitting 20% annual growth. This wasn't just about GDP figures. It represented a seismic shift in how Africans saw themselves and how the world would need to see them. Africa's vastness, four times Australia's size, three times Europe's, has been both blessing and curse. This immensity sheltered early humans in the Rift Valley and later absorbed even genocidal colonial brutality without complete conquest. Yet Europeans interpreted Africa's differences as deficiencies. When German colonists discovered Great Zimbabwe's magnificent stone structures in 1871, they attributed them to Romans, Phoenicians, anyone but Africans. Yet Africa had birthed approximately 200 kingdoms and empires, many breathtakingly sophisticated. The Mali Empire commanded 100,000 soldiers, the world's second-largest empire after the Mongols. When Emperor Mansa Musa traveled to Mecca with 60,000 people and 15 tons of gold, he spent so lavishly in Cairo that he crashed the gold market for years. His wealth, estimated at $400 billion today, possibly made him the richest person who ever lived. The fundamental disconnect wasn't about capability, but philosophy. Europe's confined spaces bred individualism and defined borders. Boundless Africa evolved Ubuntu, I am because you are. These worldviews created a rift where Europeans and Africans could witness identical realities yet see entirely different truths. South Sudan's 2011 independence exposed Western intervention's paradox. George Clooney made 7 trips in 7 years, addressing Congress, the UN Security Council, and President Obama. His celebrity manufactured a country changing millions of lives through speeches and photo ops. 21 months later, South Sudan imploded. Ethnic violence erupted between Nuer and Dinka forces, escalating to ethnic cleansing. Children shot fleeing, women systematically raped, thousands executed. The UN's Malakal compound, with air-conditioned bungalows, gyms, and recreational facilities, stood minutes from St. Joseph's Cathedral, where 2 months of systematic rape and killing unfolded. Despite housing 22,000 desperate refugees outside its razor wire, peacekeepers maintained bureaucratic routines while disaster raged beyond their walls. One senior UN official admitted, state building was a total disaster. South Africa's trajectory parallels this failure. The ANC, heroic in resistance, proved disastrous in governance. Jacob Zuma rose to power despite 783 corruption charges, building an empire on patronage while 8.7 million blacks still earned $1.25 daily in the same township shacks as under apartheid. Freedom became indistinguishable from criminality, with 16,250 murders annually, exceeding Somalia's civil war death toll. In Guinea-Bissau, cocaine trafficking, worth twice the nation's GDP, fueled 6 coups and 2 civil wars across West Africa between 2008 and 2013. When an abandoned Boeing 727 was discovered in Mali's desert in 2009, having delivered 10 tons of cocaine, Western diplomats remained fixated on aid programs rather than drug trafficking. This created perfect territory for Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, which pivoted from kidnapping to cocaine smuggling. After Gaddafi's fall, thousands of his fighters fled south with weapons that AQM eagerly purchased. In 2012, a Tuareg-AQM alliance seized northern Mali in 3 days, creating a de facto Al-Qaeda state the size of France. In Nigeria, Boko Haram transformed from religious sect to 5,000-strong rebellion after founder Muhammad Yusuf's 2009 execution, connecting politicians' corruption to widespread suffering. Their apocalyptic vision led to coordinated massacres of soldiers, Christians, moderate Muslims, and entire villages. The West had given hundreds of millions in aid to governments secretly partnered with terrorist groups who used drug profits to buy weapons and create terrorist states. In Kinshasa, Mathis Zhu of China Railway Engineering Corporation watched bulldozers transform Boulevard 30 Juin. 30 years ago, China was just like Congo. We bring modern engines, modern techniques, modern thoughts. China's approach presents itself as the anti-West, delivering visible speed with roads, dams, hospitals, and universities appearing seemingly overnight. They package these in dramatic resource for infrastructure deals, $7.5 billion to Angola for oil concessions, $23 billion for Nigerian refineries, $6 billion for Congolese infrastructure in exchange for mining rights. Government spokesman Barnabé Milinyanyo Izambia defends this. "We did 50 years with the Europeans and IMF and got nothing, not even roads." China-Africa trade exploded from $3 billion in 1995 to $107 billion by 2008, surpassing the U.S. Yet the takeover narrative misunderstands African agency. When China's presence isn't beneficial, Africans push back forcefully, from Ethiopian rebels killing Chinese oil workers to Ghanaians deporting illegal miners. The truth? China wasn't taking over Africa. Nobody ever would again.
Eleni Gabriel Mathen, who witnessed Ethiopia's devastating famines, discovered that mistrust added 26% to food prices. Her Ethiopia Commodities Exchange transformed subsistence farming by establishing transparency, turning over $1 billion in its third year. With 1.46 billion acres of unused arable land, far more than any other region, Africa was positioned to feed the world rather than require aid. Dennis Karema exemplified Africa's technological leapfrogging. In 15 years, the continent went from a few million landlines to 1 billion mobile phones. Kenya's M-Pesa grew to 17 million users by 2013, handling $2 billion monthly, exceeding Kenya's entire cash supply. While Western banks crashed, this African bank in the air flourished. In Niger, farmer Yakuba Sawadogo deepened fields, added manure to attract termites, and protected sprouting trees, creating a 25-hectare forest in the Sahara. His methods spread across West Africa, reclaiming 5 million hectares with 200 million new trees. Temperatures dropped by 5°C, rainfall increased, and conflict between farmers and herders decreased by 80%. As Dutch scientist Chris Rage noted, they did it for themselves. The new Africa defies simple categorization. Barack Obama's family went from barefoot farming to the White House in two generations. EcoBank expanded to 620 branches across 26 countries while Western banks faltered. The continent even has 8 space programs, with Nigeria launching 5 satellites. Mogadishu's revival continues at an astonishing pace. African forces pushed Al-Shabaab from the city, achieving what the UN and US had failed to do in decades. Shops reopened, expatriates returned with millions in investment, and property values tripled. President Hassan Sheikh Mohammed insists foreign aid will be received only on Somalia's terms. "We need a shift of mindset. Now we will do all we can by ourselves." In Senegal, students, rappers, and singer Youssou N'Dour forced 85-year-old President Wade from office when he attempted to extend his rule. They called themselves "new type of Senegalese," citizens taking responsibility rather than showing subservience. This is Africa's moment, not because the West finally got aid right, but because Africans stopped waiting for permission. The Rising Africa isn't about charity or intervention. It's about 1 billion people claiming the freedom to succeed or fail on their own terms.